In a series on evolution, we have four lessons thus far. And here's what we've covered thus far. If you can turn the PowerPoint on, those who haven't been here. In lesson one, we covered the dangers of evolution. There are a lot of dangers of it. When it's thrust on a society, if you come from nothing and you go to nothing, then you could act like nothing. And Romans 1 makes it very clear that society will degenerate when that doctrine is taught. And then the second lesson, we covered the theory of evolution. We have to understand it is a theory. It's just a group of speculations. Just because you have a theory, you know, everyone here can come up with a theory right now. You can come up with a theory on theories. It doesn't mean it's scientific. If it's scientific, then it's no longer a theory, it's proven. That's why they call it a theory. Let's never forget that. Third lesson we covered, the evolution of evolution. They're constantly changing evolutionary theory. Just check in a few years from now, you'll see that they'll start changing the rules again. In fact, there are more changes to the evolutionary theory by far than any of the changes that they claim occurs in evolution. And then the fourth lesson we covered, the deception of evolution. There is a great deception that goes on. There's four different levels of deception. And we, in that lesson, we actually covered the missing link and addressed it in that way. You can, if you weren't here for those lessons, you'd like to hear them, you can go online, and soon the disc will be in back that you can pick up. I try to accumulate some lessons, then we make the disc, try to put on two on each side. But today, we're starting the second half of this series. Four more lessons on evolution. So if you're sick of evolution, then you're at the wrong place. We're going to cover it four more times. But we're going to cover it now from the scientific aspect. And there are four primary categories we're going to cover in four lessons. They are as follows. The astronomical challenges to evolution, the geological challenges, the biological challenges, and then as a bonus, if you listen today, 4 weeks from now, we will cover miscellaneous challenges. So we're covering things in heaven, on earth, and under the earth. And we're going to cover all the other stuff that maybe that doesn't cover. And we're just going to try to touch on these things. And I was telling a brother this week that the most difficult part of preaching a series of lessons like this is basically you're taking a bucket and you're told to scoop out one bucket of the whole ocean to explain the whole ocean in a bucket. There's so much evidence to show what we believe in the Bible is true. It's amazing. You're going to see just a sample of that this morning. Nobody thought, though, before beginning this section of lessons, it's important to address a key factor that the evolutionists must enter into the equation in order to address the lack of scientific evidence. And that factor is time. Time. When it's mentioned that there's a lack of any observed beneficial mutations of the present, the theorist typically responds by saying it took place over millions of years. Oh, okay. Well, we're going to follow that logic for a second. They believe and teach that by adding ridiculous amounts of time, beneficial mutations did occur in the past. The evolutionary theory basically boils down to this. A rock plus water plus time equals living creatures. Okay? A rock plus water plus time equals living creatures. Now, if we were to place a rock, I was going to bring a rock, but I think you can imagine this. If I had a jar, sanitary jar, no germs, and a perfect vacuum, and I placed a rock in it and then added pure water. Everything is pure, no artificial life forms in there. And you set it down for one day. And at the end of the day, we're going to come check that. Are we going to find any life in there? No, dog, come on. Oh, but then if you wait for a whole month, then we come back, then you're going to have life, right? No? Really? Oh, well, then a year or two. That's going to make a difference. No, it's not. Oh, but you got to do it for 1,000 years. That's what you have to do, Doug. But I have to go places. I can't be here 1,000 years from now. Well, that's when it's going to happen. Well, what they do is, the evolutionist simply says, we didn't wait long enough by that jar. I'm not waiting by a jar, because it's very simple. If they say, well, in a few 100 million years, that's when it happens. Really? Einstein, he said that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. He's their poster child. Why don't they listen to him? You can stand in front of that jar all you want. It's not going to grow life. A rock plus water plus time does not equal living creatures yesterday, today, or forever. It never has. It defies all science. The evolutionist throws the time into the factor because there's not evidence. If I could just heap enough time on here, then it'd make a difference. No, I'm not going to let you get away with it. So let's make an attempt to see which religion is the most acceptable. Evolution or intelligent design? Doug, evolution's not religion. Yes, it is. It takes more faith to believe in that than it does to believe in intelligent design. We continue to prove that through this series. Let's take the Big Bang theory. How many heard of the Big Bang theory? Everybody? Oh, hey, it's a fact, right? I saw it on TV. Carl Sagan said, millions and millions of years ago. It must be true, because he's smart. He worked for Jet Propulsion Laboratory. Cornell University, Ithaca, New York. He's smart. Well, all these big bangers out there, sounds like a rock group. This is the theory that's put forth by the evolutionists to try to explain where did all this begin. Where did it come from? It theorizes that a large quantity of nothing randomly started to collect together into a dense substance and then explode outward into elements of hydrogen and helium. These gases are said to have radiated outward through the vacuum of space and eventually formed galaxies, stars, planets, moons, comets, etc. That's what it is. Well, it's much more complicated than that. No, it's not. That's the very basic essence of it. The idea was first published in 1927 by a man named Lemaître in Belgium. It derived its name from a Russian evolutionist named Gamow in 1948. Theory was taught that there was no matter in the beginning. Everything was non-matter or antimatter. And so, just nothingness. And against all odds, this nothingness gravitated together into a single tiny spot and blew up. Okay? The explosion caused all the protons, neutrons, and electrons in the universe to scatter out. Gamow even calculated the exact density of this super molecule as being 100 million times the density of water. It's a good thing he calculated this. 100 trillion times the density of water? Long, long ago in a place far, far away. It's a fairy tale. How do you calculate the weight of nothing? 5 simple reasons this could not be true. Number 1, nothingness can't pack together. It defies the law of gravity. In order for something to be pulled together, you have to have gravity. In order to have gravity, there has to be something, a mass. Nothingness has no mass. Second thing, a vacuum has the opposite effect of gravity. They say all this occurred in a perfect vacuum. And if, in order to pack together, if you have forces that are pulling it apart, that's opposite. It defies the laws of a vacuum. Third, there's no way to explode it. This defies the first law of thermodynamics, which says energy cannot be created or destroyed. It can be simply transferred. There was no energy there. Because there was nothing. You go to a gas station, you pump nothing into your car, how far do you go? you'll be calling a tow truck that pumps something into it. There was no way to organize the galaxies and stars. There's no way to organize them together. This is in direct violation to the second law of thermodynamics, which says all things are in the process of disintegration or decay. They're falling apart, not coming together. And fifth, this would be, there would be constant speed and direction from the center of the explosion. It's called the laws of motion. That's new. It's in direct violation to that. For an explosion in a vacuum would radiate equally and at the same direction everything. It would just span out. Just like if you throw a pebble into a steel pond, it's going to radiate right out to all the shores. That's the laws of motion. And so, when did they say this Big Bang occurred that defied at least five laws of the science world? Well, scientists typically teach that the Big Bang covered 10 to 15 billion years ago is when it happened. And then the stars, they formed about 5 billion years ago. And how do they arrive at this conclusion? They base it primarily on two pieces of evidence. The first one's called the redshift of the light spectrum. You know how, like if you hear an approaching train or something that's ding, 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 and that gets closer, ding, 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 that's a Doppler effect. If you do it with light, it's called the redshift effect. You can tell if something's going further or going away from it. It's going away or coming toward you. Same way you can hear a train coming. It's called the redshift. And from the redshift light spectrum readings, they can determine that the stars, the galaxy is still expanding. But you know, the Bible already said that. If they would have been reading the Bible, they would find out in Isaiah 42:5, thus says the Lord, God the Lord, who created the heavens and stretched them out. He's pulling them out. Hold that thought. Second thing is, the furthest reaches of the universe is about 15 billion light years away. Now, if light travels 300,000 kilometers per second, a light year is how far light travels in a year. So if something's 15 billion light years away from you, the light that we're apparently seeing from the furthest reaches of the galaxy or the universe was light that occurred 15 billion years ago. Wow, that seems pretty concrete, doesn't it? I think so. However, this, we have to consider this. It would be good science if we look at all the options. What if, instead of the heavenly bodies initially emanating the energy toward the earth, if it was the opposite side? If the light came first as a result of being drawn back to the sources, what would happen then? Did you know the Bible? Do you know the exact same thing is proven at that point? The redshift with the expanding galaxy and the explanation of a young Earth now comes into play. The opposite is true. You know, in Genesis, day one, God created light. Day four, he created where to put that light. Check it out. If that is true, and I believe it is, then the same thing is true with the evidence that they have, because it runs in reverse, proves the young Earth. But we have to go with more than that. The Bible clearly teaches there is intelligent design in the universe. Genesis 1:1, in the beginning God created the heaven and the earth. Psalm 102:25, of old you founded the earth, and the heavens are the works of your hands. This account does not violate the first and second law of thermodynamics, does not violate the law of gravity. It very basically says, intelligent design says, in the beginning, an intelligent being transferred his energy, or her energy, whatever energy, wherever you are in the world. I don't care what you believe. If you believe in intelligent design, the concept, you are saying that energy was transferred from one thing to another. We in the Bible believe it was he, God. He transferred his energy in an organized manner and assembled the universe. That's what we believe. He didn't defy his own laws that he built into the laws that we have. He did not defy those laws. When did this occur according to the Bible? Genesis 1:16 says that intelligent design in these astronomical bodies, it says God made great lights, greater light governing the day, lesser light governing the night. He made the stars also. If dating this based on the genealogical evidence is true, and I believe it is, if you go back to the sixth day of creation, the advent of mankind, that would place the universe in less than 10,000 years of age. Big difference between 10,000 or less and billions and billions. Why do I believe that? Psalm 19:1 says this, "The heavens are telling of the glory of God, and their expanse is declaring the work of His hands." We could say that's a Bible verse, and we'd be right, but I say it's a challenge. Oh yeah, God? The heavens are telling of Your glory, and the expanse of these heavens declares the work of Your hands? As Paul Cantrell quoted a verse today, 1 John chapter 4, verse 1, "Try the spirits to see whether they are of God." We're going to try the spirits this morning. We're going to see if these evidences do declare. Let's look at some of the evidence of this young earth. Remember, the evolutionist needs billions and billions of years in order to cloud the issue. But what does the evidence mean? Less than 10,000? For billions and billions of years. Let's look at clustered stars. There are many clustered stars in the universe. M51, the globular cluster of Hercules, all kinds of, just hundreds of clusters of stars. And a cluster of stars is when billions and billions of stars, each with its own orbit, are assembled together tightly. They're just packed together. And these stars, these groups of stars are out there. Go online, you can look at them. I should have put a picture of M51 up there. I would have, if you haven't seen one before. But a star cluster is just a big splatter of stars. It looks like a couple shotgun blasts to a paper. Only times, like the millions and billions. If the universe is billions of years old, these stars can run into clusters. What happens when you take a handful of BBs, you throw them away from you? Do they stay together? The farther they get out, the farther they spread out. And it is a fact that if the universe exploded and was created 15 billion years ago, nothing could be that compact. You were playing a game of pool and broke the pool balls. After you broke them, all of them stayed together. You'd think something was rigged, defying the odds. It's the same thing true here. The mere fact we have clusters, if you calculate what would be needed, you will see that it's a young earth. The clustered stars are telling of the glory of God, and they're declaring the works of His hands. But what about the disappearing hydrogen? When stars are burning, they convert hydrogen to helium. Fred Hoyle, a leading astronomer, maintains that if the universe was as old as the Big Bang theorists contend, there should be little hydrogen in it. It would have all been transformed into helium by now. Yet stellar spectra, it reveals that abundance of hydrogen in the stars still remains. Therefore, the universe must be a youthful universe numbering in thousands of years, not millions. It's a fact. The disappearing hydrogen is telling of the glory of God and the expanse of the universe. What about the shrinking sun? Measuring the sun's diameter over the past several hundred years, here's what they prove: that the sun is shrinking at about 5 feet per hour. 5 feet per hour. Now, based on that, assuming that it's been constant in the past, we can conclude that the Earth would have been so hot a million years ago that no life could have existed. That's a fact. In fact, only 11 million years ago, the Earth would have, where the Earth is right now, 93.5 million miles from the sun would actually be touching the Earth, and there wouldn't be no Earth. Oh, but that's 11 million years. But the earth is billions of years old. Really? No. Come on. The sun is telling of the glory of God. The expanse is declaring the work of his hands. What about those diminishing comets? Short period comets revolve around the sun every 100 or so years, usually less. The Halley's Comet every 6 years. Each revolution around the sun, they lose 1 to 2% of its mass. That's what that big tail of a comet is. That's it, leaving skid marks in the sky. Okay? Now, with that in mind, there are presently over 100 short period comets in our solar system, many of which have a period of less than 20 years. Since comets are believed to originate at the same time that the solar system did, this really calls into question the age of the universe, because if you calculated the size of those comets, the frequency in which they go around, there should be none left. The fact that there are comets left, two things are proven. Number one, that the Earth is less, the solar system is less than 10,000 years old, and there's possibly new comets entering in all the time. Either way, it's not billions of years. It's less than 10,000. The diminishing comets are declaring, are telling of the glory of God, and the expanse of those are declaring the works of his hands. Yes, God, you're proven right again. Oh, but what about Saturn's rings? Everybody knows Saturn with those nice little pretty rings around the planet. Well, G.P. Kuiper reported in 1967 that trillions of particles in the ring circling the planet Saturn are composed primarily of solid ammonia. And ammonia dissipates at a higher vaporization rate than even water. If Saturn was millions of years old, those rings would have vaporized already into space. This tells us that it is a young solar system. And in fact, as an additional bonus, the meteors that strike Saturn every year. If Saturn was even millions of years old, there would be no rings because they would have already been taken out by the meteors that would have come through. It's estimated based on that, less than 10,000 years. That's right. Saturn's rings declare the works of his hands as well. What about Jupiter's moons? Voyager 1 space probe passed by the moons of Jupiter in 1979, and it was the closest look we ever had to the moons of Jupiter. Four Galilean moons, Io, Callisto, Ganymede, and Europa, the closest one, it zoomed in on it. What it found was amazing. That on that, the closest moon of the four Galilean moons, the Galileo discovered, I think it was 1610, that moon, which it has active volcanoes on, shooting the lava and the fallout 60 to 160 miles into the atmosphere. It's the most active volcanoes ever known to man. And what we find about that is, as it's throwing these projectiles 2,000 miles per hour out of the volcanoes, they started comparing this to what the evolutionist says was the origin of the Earth. See, they taught that 5 billion years ago, we were a big ball of lava. And then 4 billion years ago, things started to cool, and whatever massive volcanoes there were, then Io directly defied. According to Io, Io can't exist. Because how could this be going through something 5 billion years ago today? Hence, less than 10,000 years ago. Jupiter is telling of the glory of God. And the expanse is telling of the work of his hands. What about that lunar dust? Can't forget that moon dust. Evolutionists typically believe that the Earth and the Moon to be about the same age, 4.5 to 5 billion years, give or take 500 million years. Okay? Because the Moon does not have an atmosphere, solar radiation causes a breakdown of the rocks on the Moon. And a pretty rapid breakdown of it. In fact, they estimate between 3 and 4 ten-thousandths of an inch generates dust from those rocks in the air. Well, see, back when Apollo landed on the moon, something interesting happened. In 1969, before they landed on there, they were so concerned because based on the calculation, the moon was 4.5 billion years old, and at 3 to 4 ten-thousandths of an inch of dust, that would put roughly 30 miles of dust on the moon. And they had to send a rover to fly in and land to see how deep the dust was. And they expected the whole thing to disappear under the ground, because it would be 30 miles of dust. They found just a few inches. That's all. Oops, miscalculated. And what's really neat is, if you calculate the dust they did find on that, 7 to 10,000 years of age. That's right. Moon dust is declaring the work of his hands. Not only that, but what about the lunar recession? Due to tidal friction of the moon circling around us, the moon is actually drifting away further and further every year, at 4 centimeters a year. I don't know who had the tape measure lined up to the moon, but they did parsecs. But here's what happened. They find that the moon is falling away 4 centimeters a year. Based on that, the moon would have to be 10,000 or less years old. And this is why. If the moon, based on that distance falling away, 20 to 30,000 years, it would have been so close it would have actually hit the Earth, and there would be no moon, and probably no Earth either. But you know what? Once again, the moon is telling of the glory of God, and the expanse is declaring the work of his hands. What about those falling meteors? Whenever a meteor hits the Earth, it produces a small amount of meteor dust called micrometeor. And since the Earth is struck 20,000 times on any given day with a meteor, the planet actually gains, calculated by scientists, 25 tons every single day. That's how much meteor we accumulate on the Earth. Now, based on that, based on 25 tons per 24-hour period, if the Earth was thousands of years old, then it would work out. If the Earth was billions of years old, that amount would end up more than the Earth. Oops. That's right. Even the meteors are telling of the glory of God, and the expanse is confirming the works of his hands. What about the Earth's rotation? The rotation of the Earth is slowing down. You know, when you spin a top, come on top! And it's spinning, and then what does it do? It slows down. That's right. If you can figure out how the top doesn't slow down, then I'm on top of it. Just like a big old top, the Earth is spinning, but the Earth is slowing. And what's really interesting about that is, using the calculation of the decreasing that they've measured, if the Earth was 5 billion years old, it would have stopped billions of years ago. However, if you just take 10,000 years, it works out. If you were to take, let's say, 20 or 30,000 years old, the Earth would have been spinning so fast that the equator would be sticking 40 miles up in the air. Oops, that's right. The Earth's rotation is declaring the work of his hands. What about the Earth's magnetic field? Our planet is losing a little bit of our magnetic field every year. In 1835, since then, we've lost 14% of it. They've been measuring it since then. At that rate, 20,000 years ago, the Earth would have been so hot, it would be liquid. But you know what? The Earth's not liquid. I checked. It's actually confirmed, based on that, for less than 10,000 years. The magnetic field is telling the glory of God, and their expanse is declaring the works of his hands. And you know what? There's much that can be covered concerning the astronomical challenges that evolution has, but time does not permit. We don't have the liberty of just slapping on a couple billion years and extending the sermon series. We don't have the benefits of an evolutionist. But you know what we do have? We have the fact that the heavens are telling of the glory of God, and their expanse is declaring the work of his hands. Astronomy has spoken. And yes, God wins again. God is still looking great after the first realm, the first category of evidences. If you have grown in your faith just looking at this lesson alone, and you would like to share that with somebody else, or you need encouragement from others in the congregation, or you would like to become a Christian, you've never submitted your soul to the Creator of the universe, we give you that opportunity. Are you willing to live for Him the rest of your life? Do you believe that Jesus Christ was dead, buried, resurrected? Are you willing to walk in the light as He is in the light? Are you willing to love one another? Are you? Then you need to die to yourself and live to Christ. Die in these waters of baptism. You come up knowing that you've been renewed, the washing of regeneration, the renewal of the Spirit. If you want to respond to the invitation now, don't do it while we stand in the Spirit.